All right, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We have a live feed yet? I'm looking on the TV, I don't see it. There we go. Good morning, welcome to our study session for January 21st. And first I'd like to excuse the mayor, who is at a U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting, and then Councilmember Summers, who is away some training for work, so we excuse them. We first on the agenda would like to review our agenda for the coming council meeting for the 25th. Everyone gets that ready. I know it's there. There we go. Do we have any items to discuss on page 2? Oh. Page 3.
Vice Mayor.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Vice Mayor, I have questions actually on items 3K through 3S on pages 3, 4, and 5. These are all new beer and wine store licenses for Walgreens. And I believe these, actually it's goes up to 3G, excuse me, 3G through 3S. I believe these are almost all new Walgreens stores that have been built in the last 10 years or so, and as those of you who are old-timers might remember that Walgreens as a corporate policy discontinued selling liquor sales a number of years ago. Previously in the old design stores they had segregated sections within the store for liquor sales that helped serve crime prevention purposes. And I guess what I would like to hear hopefully before Monday night's council meeting from Walgreens in terms of one, why they're suddenly adding liquor sales to all these stores, but more importantly, from perspective of the license, have they been in discussions with our police department in terms of how they propose to redesign the interior of these stores to incorporate crime prevention measures? Because retail establishments that sell liquor consume a lot of public safety resources, as we know, and I want to be sure that that Walgreens has been in communication with our police department so that we can have an understanding of what changes they're making within the stores to apply for a liquor license, because I believe that in our recommendations to the state liquor department, a responsible license holder needs to incorporate crime prevention design within their facilities.
So we'll see what kind of answer Ed has for us.
Yes. Councilmember, Vice Mayor, Councilmember, we did attempt to contact Walgreens when we heard about your inquiries yesterday afternoon. We weren't successful due to the hour, but hopefully today or Monday morning we should be able to contact them, and hopefully by Monday's meeting we'll be able to get an answer to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Mayor.
Councilmember Richard.
Can you check the zoning case, too, to see if there's any stipulations around Walgreens?
Sure.
I remember some discussion about that when they came in for their zoning.
Was there a particular location or?
I remember University and Extension was one of them, because that was the one in our neighborhood. But I think we should probably check all the zoning cases, because sometimes they come in and, oh, we don't sell booze, and they add it to a stipulation of their zoning.
We'll see.
They might have a little bit more work to do than just a simple liquor license.
All right. Thank you. Moving on to page 4. Page 5. 6, 7,
yeah.
Gina?
Vice Mayor, item 5E, the business service department modifying fees for massage manager license fees. Was there, I didn't see where you might have looked at other cities to get that fees, or did you just, I don't want to say just make them up, but did they come from somewhere, or are they based on something?
Vice Mayor, Council Member, we did look at Phoenix fees. Phoenix is $40 application and $25 for the license and the renewal each year. Our application fees are generally either $50 or $100, so we did go to $50 for the application fee, but the license fee each year and the renewals is the same as Phoenix fee.
Ed, what other, I mean, we try to make this consistent with our
The employee license for the sexually oriented employee license, and I don't remember. There's one other that's at 50, and then all the others are generally at 100.
Right.
Okay. All right. Is there anything on page 8?
Yep. Vice Mayor.
Okay, go ahead.
Item 6A. I wondered if there's somebody in the planning department. Hi, John. Good morning. That could actually explain the new design review process to the public at Plain at Home.
Sure. Vice Mayor, Council Member, we did put together a description of that process as we have outlined how we'll operate under the new system. First part of it is pretty similar in terms of when applications come in, typically to get them on the processing. Typically the first Tuesday of the month we get those in. Once those come in, we take them, distribute them out to the board for them to begin to look at the work session that they would have the following month on the first Wednesday. We would, with the board members, review those applications. In the meantime, we would have had some staff review, give some preliminary feedback to the applicant. We would get in the letters to send out to the property owners within 300 feet, notifying them of the work session, and that staff would be taking action on the case following the work session. At the work session, the typical procedure would be for staff to give a brief background presentation on the case, what the particulars are. Applicant would then be able to talk to the board about what their objectives are. We actually meet in this room and we spread the plans out and the board members stand around with the applicant to look at them and the board members then get a chance to ask questions and provide feedback to the applicant and staff on any things they see that they think maybe need to be adjusted in the plans to make sure we're meeting the quality standards of the city. From there then we would summarize what the board's looking for in the design, any modifications. The applicant can then go away and make those modifications as they see fit, submit those back to staff, and from that point it'd be a staff working with the applicant to come up with a final design that we believe meets the guidelines and the ordinance, the direction from the design review board and other things that staff thinks are needed to make it the quality development. Again, citizens have the opportunity to provide input too during that process. If that happens, we could take those into account. We'd negotiate then with the applicant in whatever time frame they're bringing stuff back to us and providing them feedback to come to a final design. If for some reason the applicant doesn't like the stipulations we're putting on the approval, or we feel like we need more direction from the board, we could come back to the board for additional direction, or the applicant could appeal it back to the board for anything they don't like that staff puts on the approval of the case.
So there's not, there won't be a formal notification to the public where they will come in and see what the final design will look like. Because now in the work session, you'll be reviewing stuff and deciding, but the public that's there might not, I wouldn't understand some of the changes architects talk about. So I wouldn't actually see it till it starts going up, unless I follow you and call you on a regular basis to when the final drawings are in.
That's correct. That's not that dissimilar from what happens today. If there are changes that the design review board in their meeting says, we approve it subject to all these changes, then unless a citizen is following up and coming in to see those final changes, they wouldn't see them either. But if they're interested and have contacted us or come to the work session, we know they're interested, then we would make sure that they have that opportunity to, if they're in, again, continue to be interested to see those things as we are approving them.
But currently during the work session and the approval, you don't make huge, once it's on the agenda, typically stuff is on consent because you've worked it out in the work session.
When it has come back to board, true. That's
right.
Been
so
the case.
Today, you kind of come back to the final review and you know what the building's going to look like, or the public will. So I'm concerned that we're kind of cutting out public input and public review of what's going on in design review. And to me, it looks like, I know we're not doing that, we're trying to cut down staff time and make things move smoother, but it just has the appearance that we're just approving stuff on our own within the city. And remove the public approval process.
Yeah. Vice Mayor and Councilmember Higgins, I understand what you're saying, and that certainly, I guess, could happen. We get very little citizen involvement in these to begin with, and our intent would be if we know somebody is interested in a case and they've come in, they've checked, they're interested in what's happening, that before we would give that approval, we would again contact that individual and let them know we're at the final if they want to come look at it, they certainly have that chance.
I just will say I'm still uncomfortable with the changes that we're planning for design review board. So I guess would like this off consent so that we could talk about it. Okay. Thank you.
Duly noted. Take that off consent for discussion on Monday. Is there anything else?
Vice Mayor, I think item 5I is really kind of an interesting item here where the city and the school district are coming together to share resources. If you would allow us, we have just a real short presentation, maybe just to talk a little bit about what the benefits for the city and the school district will be in this new partnership. I think we have a real short presentation. If you don't mind, we could just
sure.
go over that with the council real quickly.
Thank you. We'd like to just do a real short presentation. I think we have a really exciting, and I think it's just an innovative approach. We've partnered with Mesa Public Schools, and I'd like to apologize for Assistant Superintendent Garrick Monroe. He couldn't make it today, but he's been our partner throughout this whole process. We have an IGA in front of the council, as well as an exciting first project. And you all know Assistant Chief Dvorak, and I have Dale Shaw, the Assistant CIO, who's going to go through a short presentation to talk about the IGA and the first project with our regional partnership with Mesa Public Schools.
I think we're still waiting to get that presentation up for the audience. But you do have handouts, so I can probably start. As Alex indicated, we're entering into an IGA with Mesa Public Schools. To do technology sharing. It's a broad IGA. It's intentionally put together that way to allow us the flexibility to execute projects as we find out that there are opportunities to do so. In the past, if we had an opportunity to share on a project, we would have to generate an IGA for each and every project. So, what's innovative about this approach is its broad scope and its simplicity. And what we essentially will do is establish task orders as those projects are identified and move forward. It's really the equivalent of in the private sector of a joint venture. It allows for the sharing of technologies, contract, and staff. So basically any area as it relates to technology, we're looking to partner where it makes sense to do so. It avoids overlapping in solutions. In talking with Mesa Public Schools, it's become pretty obvious that we share the same geographic area, we share the same customers, and we are, in many cases, we have overlapping solutions for technology. And so we want to take a common sense approach and look at those areas where it makes sense to do it one time. And to achieve some level of cost savings by finding those economies of scale. It also fosters a regional approach. When we look at the opportunities, it's pretty clear that there are other areas, other school districts, where maybe other municipalities, we could all join forces and look for ways of finding those economies. Our first project, we're very excited about it because it's an opportunity to enhance safety for students in Mesa Public Schools. And Assistant Chief Dvorak is going to talk a little bit about what this first project gives us the opportunity to do.
Hi, good morning. The first project is really, I think, an outstanding joint venture between the schools and the city, but certainly the police department and what we consider some of our operations where communication is of a very critical nature. And what we're trying to accomplish here is any critical incident that's near a school property, the ability to directly communicate with the school from the incident command aspect of the incident. We feel that what we're going to try to do is have a portable radio that is at each of the schools that will allow them to communicate with the police department or any emergency personnel that's in charge of the event so that they can take a look at exchange of information, look at different deployment, and really develop three areas, which is enhance our communication, number one. Number two is operational effectiveness so that we're more quickly and able to effectively deploy our resources on that scene. And really, I think overall from a force multiplier standpoint, the ability for increased overall campus safety. kind of give you a more specific application of what I'm referring to. Two major aspects, I think, is where the communication will come and certainly help us, and that is when we're in a school lockdown situation or we're in an evacuation scenario. Both of those where communication with the on-site designated person, which more likely will be the principal or assistant principal, will allow us to communicate with them directly during these incidents and be able to patch information from the incident commander directly into the schools. And that will allow us to coordinate what we're trying to do from an incident command situation and give them information and intelligence at the school so they understand the total operation. So we feel it mainly will be applied during those two basic scenarios of lockdowns or evacuations. Also, other possible incidents may come into play as a third, but really the lockdown and evacuations, I think, are going to be the primary usage. It's a low-frequency event, but obviously of high liability and certainly of high concern when those come across. A very minimal capital costs for this particular project for both the public schools as well as the city of Mesa to make this operational. The progress that we've made today, we're here about the IGA relationship with the Mesa Public Schools and the city of Mesa. The technical requirements that we currently have a committee involved with the schools are going to really address several areas. Mesa Public Schools is going to purchase the radios that will actually allow for the communication, and that technical team currently is working on the communications and the compatibility requirements to ensure that there's ability to communicate on our systems. From an operational standpoint, we have a committee that's between the Mesa Public Schools and the Police Department that is working on the training that will be involved for our first responders and incident commanders, as well as the designated personnel from the schools, which, like I said, was probably the principal or assistant principal that will be designated at each location.
Steve, I've got a question for you. Is this proposal that we're talking about going to be direct communication between school personnel and police officers on site, or is it going to be relayed through our dispatch?
It's going to be patched through our communications, but we'll give them direct communication with the incident commander. So if I'm the incident commander, say at the school during a lockdown, where I say we're looking for a person in that area, as the incident commander, I'll be able to talk directly into the school and talk to the principal or assistant principal and give them some relay of information on what we're working on and updates of information.
So this is not direct into our police radio system as much as it is just a patch through for that incident.
Right. They're using our communications really just to, as a conduit to patch the patch the network of technology so that we can talk directly. The radio will not be operational all the time, so they must go through communications. And then that patch is established, and that allows then on that incident for the police incident commander to talk directly to the school principal, for instance, in any one of those scenarios.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Go ahead. I interrupt you, so continue, please.
That's okay. At the tail end here as well. Certainly, the operation group not only is working on the training of the personnel involved in this to ensure that we have a coordination of efforts. We're also establishing the policies that we'll use for this deployment as well so that it's consistently done and there's understanding of what we're trying to accomplish. And we believe the future opportunities as well with this sort of program is a good outreach also to our TRWC partners as well in the other Valley cities. So it gives us an opportunity to even expand beyond the Mesa Public School system as well.
Okay, you've got to go beyond TRWC. You've got to skip acronyms and say what it is.
It's Topaz Regional Wireless Cooperative. It's our regional radio system that we've talked about before.
Thank you. Dave?
I just wanted to comment how excited I was to see this partnership on the agenda and looking through that. It's something that my constituents have asked me about a lot, and we've done other cooperative agreements with Mesa Public Schools, but I think this really takes the next step. So I just wanted to give you big thumbs up on this one and great work for finding ways to save money for the taxpayers. I really appreciate that.
And just to add on to that, you know what I love seeing is the shift in culture. You know, we're looking on a public safety basis of some of the regional systems, ambulance, and to see it go through IT and innovation, and I mean, just really a nice move in the overall look as the organization that we're looking at everything. We're throwing out a lot of the old sacred cows and a new culture, so thank you so much.
Okay, Dennis?
This really struck me when I looked at the proposal earlier this week. We received, I think, a National League of Cities publication talking about this is the time to submit applications for innovative actions by local government. And to me, this is another example, the regional cooperation aspects of the TOPAD system, the ambulance system, and now particularly this, I think really offers a great example to other communities across the country in terms of breaking down those barriers and partnering for the broader good. And I think it's also an example of even in very difficult economic times, how local governmental units are still searching for ways to innovate, to be inventive, to provide services in a better manner, rather than just worrying about, you know, economic doom and gloom. So I commend you for this effort, and I'm hoping that this is one of those kinds of projects that we as a community may want to submit for an innovation award with the National League of Cities. Thank you.
Very good. And again, historically, we have had a great relationship with Mesa Public Schools and a lot of cooperation. This is a whole different approach, a different realm to step into. And as Councilmember Fender mentioned, some of the sacred cows that have been there, because historically public safety is very protective of its domain and what they do, and this is really a big step, and I commend you for working on this. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Next, we have to hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. Go ahead, Alex.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just quickly, I received a call this morning from a constituent very worried about retention bases filling, and so it gave me the opportunity to kind of drive around for some of the challenges in the past, and especially along the lines of infrastructure, stormwater. And I just wanted to commend Beth Hewing and the engineering department on a couple of issues, Brown and Stapley, and also the Groves neighborhood. There's been outstanding leadership there. Right now, they would be probably having the worst day of their lives as water's going into homes like it has done in the past. And so efforts over the last year to remedy those problems are going to be realized today and probably overlooked by a lot of people. And so my appreciation to them to work through a couple of really difficult issues and get the infrastructure in place to take care of stormwater. And the other is I've had a couple of people talk to me about the completed project at Gilbert and University. That was a 2009 bond issue. Just watching how that came through with Dan over in transportation and I think Glenn Gorky, and they were able to take some really challenging issues, work with the customers, the business people in the area, and just an amazing completion of a project and seeing how traffic moves through there. So for me today, and especially with these storms coming, the infrastructure look at things probably going to be missed by most of the citizens, but actually a lot of good work's been completed. So thank you, Vice Mayor.
All right. And my bad, we had one item on the agenda to discuss, and when we inserted the other one, I got out of sorts here. So let's back up and do item number two with the update on the federal building. Go ahead, Carrie.
Thank you. Good morning, Vice Mayor and members of the council. I'm Carrie Kent, Deputy City Manager, and I'm also serving as the Acting Arts and Cultural Director. I'm here today to discuss the potential reuse of the former federal building. And by the end of the presentation, what I'll be seeking is direction from you regarding your interest in having us work with identified stakeholders such as Mesa Historical Society, as well as our city's Arizona Museum of Natural History, to pursue a concept plan for programming the building's use and also developing an updated cost estimate. This just gives an aerial perspective of the federal building that's located just north of Main at the intersection of McDonald and Pepper. It's about one block away from the city's Arizona Museum for Youth, which is identified as AMI here, and it's also directly across from our Arizona Natural History Museum. And then with walking distance down Main Street, you see the MAC, the Mesa Arts Center, which houses our contemporary arts museum as well, and we've referred to this as our Arts and Cultural District. These are just some street views of the building on the east side of the federal building, as well as the northern and west side of the building. By way of background, the federal building was built in 1936, had some additions in the 60s and some ADA modifications in 1975. It was actually used as Mesa's post office until the 70s, and then the federal government used it for various offices and storage. Because of its age, it is eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places, and we'd have to go through it. Before any construction is done, we'd have to work with our state historic preservation office. Additionally, the city acquired the building in 2002 at no cost through a program called Federal Lands to Parks Programs. And actually, the city submitted a detailed application to the Department of Interior, which was ultimately approved, and laid out some short-term goals as well as some long-term goals. In the short term, our Natural History Museum was going to be using it for some exhibit preparation and storage, but ultimately we identified various partnerships through our museums and historical society and libraries to actually put that building back into use for public, not only for storage, but also some public use that provides some exhibit space as well and open it up to the community. In 2005, there was actually some building analysis that was done looking at the interior and exterior conditions of the building at the time. Some of the codes that were analyzed, our building codes was 2003 building codes, and since then we've adopted the 2006 code as well as the existing building code that is something that we want to look at if we do move forward with another analysis. We looked at some short-term and long-term goals, however, we really didn't look at defining the details and the specific uses of the building. It is structurally sound because of its age. As I mentioned, there's historical significance. There's approximately 12,000 square feet for programmable space and 37 parking spots. There was some preliminary cost estimates that were done based on short-term and long-term goals. If it was used for storage, there was an estimated cost of about $325,000. And additionally, there would be about $900,000 for other renovations and code-related upgrades for a total of just over $1 million. And at the time, again, it was preliminary in using the 2003 codes. The investment to date, last year we did move forward with some asbestos removal. There's a small portion that does remain. We did use cultural impact fees, and as you know, those are restricted funds that are specifically used for the expansion of cultural services in the community. And so we wanted to move forward at least with the first step in doing some abatement in that building. In the application, we identified several partners, as I mentioned. The Arizona Museum, our Natural History Museum, was identified as a partner. They currently are the existing tenant using that for some exhibit preparation and storage. And ultimately, they see this building as an opportunity for some additional public uses and educational exhibits. In addition, the Mesa Historical Society was identified, and Mr. Vic Linoff is behind me representing the Historical Society, and they were identified as a partner with us in this building. As you all know, in the short term, that the city's working with the Historical Society on collaborating on the Play Ball exhibit and relocating that exhibit to our city's Arizona Museum for Youth, which opens on, put a plug, February 26. And then also we're working with them to exhibit some of their heritage resources in some of our downtown facilities, such as our libraries. For example, they had a Wallace and Ladmo exhibit that they've partnered with the libraries to exhibit that collection in the three libraries that we have throughout the city. But in the long term, they ultimately see a presence in the downtown and sharing their cultural resources as part of this arts and cultural district. As a reminder, last October when you went through your strategic initiatives that supporting the arts, and you actually gave a couple of specific examples regarding having the city continuing to partnering with the Historical Museum, as well as an example, you discussed considering the reuse of the former federal building as part of your council initiatives. So next steps, what I'm seeking your direction today is to retain an outside consultant, and we're estimating about $25,000 that would be paid out of the cultural impact fees, again, dedicated for the expansion of cultural services. And what we would do is facilitate a work session with our stakeholders, the museums, and the Historical Society to really start programming that building and coming up with a more detailed cost estimate that we can bring back to you for next steps and consideration. So with that, that's all of my presentation and any questions that you may have of me.
Well, I do have one initial question is, why do we need to retain a consultant for information that we have a lot? What is a consultant going to do for us?
And actually, Beth, I'll probably, because there's some more detailed, I think, work that we need to do because it was preliminary. So I'll, I ask Beth to join me today.
So the consultant is more in line with construction, remediation, all that stuff.
Yeah, this is more like the first stage of the design process where we'd actually program the space and do some more investigation of the space. Since the last report was done, we've also done the environmental remediation, which has changed the interior. So some of the walls, we'll probably decide based on that, some of the walls may need to come down. Looking at what some of the remediation has been done, where they've had to pull pipes out of the walls, so there may be some structure changes that have to occur from that. So this is really kind of the first step in the design process where you do the conceptual floor plans and look at how you'd utilize the space in more detail.
So conceptual floor plan, but wouldn't we want the stakeholders to first kind of give us decide what we want to do before we do a conceptual?
That would be the first step. Mm-hmm. Because we need to really program the space and figure out what we want to do with it.
See what it's going to take to accomplish that.
Right.
And that's what the consultant would be for.
Yes.
Okay, Dennis?
I guess just a comment. I think this is a very positive step. I was part of the council in 2002 that approved the application. And in terms of institutional memory, those of you who weren't here may not remember, but we were competing against a proposal to put a men's shelter there from a nonprofit in the Northeast, and that was a permitted use under the federal act. And so the city, the museums partnered together with the Historical Society, I think, to put together an application that ultimately was approved by the federal government to look at long-term use of the structure for museum purposes, both storage and exhibits. And I know certainly that's the that was a strong consideration in the federal government in making that decision to transfer the property to us. I had the opportunity to go with Mr. Brady and his staff a couple months ago to tour the building. And I think there are certainly are challenges in the building, but there's a lot of opportunities as well as Beth has indicated. And I think it's appropriate at this time to look at how the space could be programmed and then also to look at the remediation issues that would need to be done to move the project further along. I know that when I was serving on the Historical Society board as an active member, one of our long-term goals for the community was to have this partnership with the city and to perhaps identify this site as Mesa's Centennial Project. And you know, what a more perfect way to do to make sure that we preserve our history and find an exhibit space that complements the other museums we have. And I think that it would be a great location for this, but this is just a kind of a baby step, but I think an important one for the stakeholders to understand, could it work and how would it work, as well as for the manager and staff to understand really what would be the cost of doing this. So I would hope that we would approve the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Dave?
I really think this is an opportunity for us to show some leadership in downtown or continued leadership in downtown, and it's a big hole, excuse me, a big hole in the middle of our downtown, and it would be great to see us take the opportunity to do a good project there that helps connect the museums. I really think it's about time that we do that, so I just want to lend my support to that concept. It's also easier to go to other property owners in downtown and say, hey, We're spending some money. We need to do what we can to help these older buildings in downtown. They're going to be a challenge, but that's what makes downtown interesting and unique. I know it's expensive. We all understand that. But it's really another piece of the fabric of our unique downtown. And
So I wholeheartedly support moving forward.
Okay. Alex?
I'm very supportive of this. Looking at being able to be involved with museum, Arizona Museum for Youth, and looking, I do get the ideas as, and I know, like Council Member Kavanaugh said, this is the baby steps, and I think it's a great way to go to look at all options. I'm hoping one of the options, and this might really get me in trouble with some folks, is looking at the Lehigh property, how that can be sold or handled, and then taking revenues from that and being able to come up to here. And I think it's important to have a history. I was born in a Phoenix hospital, but raised here in Mesa, and I think it's an important part to have that historical look. So thank you.
All right, thank you. And I want to thank staff for bringing this forward, and then I won't have to keep pounding Chris to move this forward. He's probably tired of hearing me. So, so I think you have your direction to move forward.
Great, thank you. Thank you. We'll proceed.
All right, thank you. Let's continue then with reports. Dennis?
Vice Mayor, Tuesday I attended a meeting of the Maricopa Association of Government's Human Services Coordinating Committee, and at that time the committee recommended to the full board our plans for both human services funding as well as transportation related expenses for human services programs. And as you might understand, it was gloom and doom, and there's great concern on the part of the region on the impact on our capacity to serve our residents. This is a region-wide cooperation, but certainly the changes at the state level and the uncertainty of what's going to happen with the legislature could severely impact the ability of the Maricopa Association of Governments to continue to provide these services at a meaningful level. So I'll continue to keep you informed as we move through the process, but our recommendations should be going to the MAG Regional Council for their consideration shortly.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Anything?
Well, we didn't. I just wanted to share a couple things about the MLK weekend celebrations. And I had the honor of speaking at the candlelight service on Friday night with Vice Mayor Jones and his wife and my husband. And it was a great event, and you really need to put it on your calendar for next year. It's such a great thing. So many different communities come together in a location. And we had a lot of fun, didn't we, Vice Mayor?
Absolutely.
And then Dave was going to talk about the parade. No, Dave's not going to. We also had a great opportunity to ride in an historic horse-drawn fire cart, which is one of our community member Tom Nesbitt's fully restored thing. And so, again, Councilmember Richens and his darling two little girls who were practicing their queenly waves were able to wave throughout the parade route. And Vice Mayor Jones, along with members of the
Human Relations Advisory Board.
Thank you, Human Relations Advisory Board. So that was also a very nice event.
All right. Well, there was also, along with the MLK celebrations that went on, there was an MLK Day of Service that was clear across the valley. And we had, in my district, there were groups that painted four homes in our development area. So that was a great project. They came out bright and early. The mayor and I greeted them and went around each of the four homes, and it was great. The very grateful homeowners that were not able to take care of that themselves. Also, last Thursday evening was the opening or the open house for the Banner Heart Hospital. Several of us were in attendance to that, got to tour the new facility, the cath lab and so forth. Very state-of-the-art, very wonderful facility that they're opening up there. Also, I had went to Arizona Museum for Youth for the opening, the display of artwork that was watercolor portraits of themselves, of students. I believe it was from Fremont Junior High. Very good display. I was very impressed at the quality of the work that they had. So I encourage folks to go down to the Arizona Museum for Youth and look at the display of artwork in that hallway that's done by our own school students here. Also yesterday, at our Metro Rail Board meeting, we welcomed our new CEO for Metro Rail Board, Steve Banta, joined us, and he's raring to go. We had a great meeting and a great kickoff for the new year and the new CEO, so we're looking forward to a lot more great things, in spite of the fact that, like everything else, we have to look for ways to cut costs. Even with the light rail, that's going to be a challenge. So if there is nothing else from members, then we'll go to Chris with meetings.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just to remind everyone, the community, that this evening we have our meet and greet with the police chief candidates. That'll be from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Mesa Convention Center, the Palo Verde Ballroom. So we invite everyone to come out and meet the candidates that are there. The candidates have already met with a group of employees that were randomly selected out of the police department, and they, I believe it was yesterday afternoon, met with members of the different community forums that we have set up to do to get input for the police department. We had representatives from each one of those community groups. So that open house again is this evening. And then, a reminder of the council, we also have your opportunity for you to meet with the candidates on Monday, and that'll be up on the seventh floor, and we'll have them in a different one of the different conference rooms for you to come and meet with them during that time. So we invite you to do that. Also, this Saturday, the 23rd, is the 10th annual historic home tour from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you can get tickets for that at the Mesa Historical Museum. Also, we have MacFest this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it will continue all the way through April. And a reminder, we do have a council meeting Monday, January 25th. And the January 28th study session will be canceled, and will be invited to attend the mayor's breakfast at the Hilton that morning. That breakfast is from 7:30 a.m. To 9 a.m. Thank you.
And we're all going to be positive. The rain will clear for Saturday afternoon for the home tours, and it'll be a great day.
There you go.
All right. Nothing else? Do we have any items from citizen present?
No items, Vice Mayor.
We do not. With that, then, we will move into an executive session.
Second.
Move second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
I need a water.